This is the Boop Show, some gaming news you can use for February 8th, 2016. I'm Scott Johnson. Let's do it. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Boop Show. That's right. Brand new episode today. And every Monday, why am I even talking like that? What is Scott talking about? Well, let me explain to the listeners at home, because plenty of you, actually, most of you, will still get this show via the podcast, which is good. That's why we started it. But every Monday at noon Mountain Time, I'll be streaming this live as I record it with a live audience who can also call in, which we may hear sometime here in the next little bit. Oh, you know what might help is if Skype was open. Because I kind of need that to take your calls. There we go. Anyway, those are for the live listeners. And when they call in, I can talk to them. They can ask questions. They can have feelings and thoughts and stuff to say about various topics that we may be presented with. And every Monday, live at noon, Mountain Time, it's me and you talking video games. Part of this is, if I'm going to be honest, keep me more on my regular schedule. You guys are like the laxative to my stuffed up rear end. All right, bad example. You are the you're the wind beneath my wings. You're the Vaseline on my shoulders. What? Okay, let's back that up. You're the Kevlar on my Counter-Strike, man. Speaking of which, I played a little Counter-Strike the other day for the stream. You know, you forget just how much fun you can have with Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike Go is good. I think most of you are aware of this, but I think it's extra good, and I forgot how good. And the reason I like it is partially because there's been no Overwatch, so my shooter fix has been hard to come by, my competitive shooter fix. So spending a little bit of time with Counter-Strike was one way of solving that, but then I don't have to worry much longer because Overwatch will be back soon. We'll talk about that in the news, at least for me and a handful of players, and maybe some new ones. We'll see how that goes. Other than that, been playing Grim Dawn. Do you guys remember Grim Dawn? It hit Kickstarter, some year and a half, 2 years ago now. It's got to be a little bit more than that even. I could be wrong on the time, but it seems like it's been a long time. And I backed it then, knowing the pedigree of the game, which was a bunch of ex-Blizzard guys who had some Diablo experience. Plus, they had all gone on to do that other game whose name escapes me, where it's all like a Diablo game set in like Roman / Greek mythology, and the name is escaping me, and the chat room will tell me in a second. But anyway, great. They say Grim Dawn is an emo stripper I used to know. Great. At any rate, these guys came from some sweet background. I really liked their game, and I liked their work on Diablo before that. And so they were like, yeah, we're doing a crowdfunded game. And it will be an action RPG, and it will be different. Titan Quest, thank you, that's the name. Titan Quest. Everyone remember Titan Quest? Fantastic game and expansion. Real good. Maybe at the time, this was like 06 when that came out, it was probably the closest I had gotten to what I loved about Diablo in a non-Diablo game. And so, high expectations for what Grim Dawn would be. Didn't really know, other than what they said in the Kickstarter and what they would say with their updates. It hit early access not too horribly long ago, and during that entire process, I had access to alpha and beta because I had backed it. And I didn't play much in those early days because things were real rough, real unfinished. Both content and just sort of the rough edges were rougher than you'd like. So gave it some time, let them kind of flesh things out. It is now content complete, and I decided to actually dive in this time, like really go for it, build a character, see what the story has to hold, and so on. And I'm happy to report it's pretty damn good. It's a very unusual setting. So this isn't your typical fantasy setting. This isn't even a typical science fiction setting. It's something in the middle. It's more like steampunk meets Fallout in a weird way. So a lot of like old technology or leftover stuff from a previous civilization. You're using shields that are made out of, you know, barbed wire and fence. You got like an old gun musket thing that someone left around all rusty and nasty. And, you know, you kind of start out that way. Lots of leather things. It's all very Mad Max-y kind of future, but also a little bit of steampunk, and there's some magic in there, obviously, and all that. I'm building a demolitionist, throws a lot of Molotov cocktails, burns a lot of things. He's a guy that likes to burn things. And his name is GURP, because that's how I roll, and it's great. I like it. I like it a lot, actually. I think it looks nice. It's gritty, but to its credit, it's gritty. I don't mean that in a bad way or a pejorative use of that term. And it's compelling, and there's lots of weird mutiny crap to kill, and there's sets and legendaries and all the things you expect from a game like this. The loot grind is good. They've opted to go with that old school kind of Tetris approach to inventory, which I know some of you right now are going, "Oh, shite, that's the worst thing ever. Please don't do that to us again. We prefer Torchlight or even the way Diablo 3 handles it, which is a much more reasonable approach to how inventory and slots work. It's a nice mix. Like, I feel like Path of Exile went too far in trying to make you have big wacky shapes that you had to try to cram into your small inventory pile. This game is much better at that, but it's not quite as convenient as Diablo 3's approach, which is like most things fit in a single slot, some in two because they're a little bit taller, but it's usually one and two, right? This is like, this one takes three. This one is wide enough to take, you know, three wide and three tall. Like, there's definitely odd shapes in there, but it's an okay balance. And they do have a kind of rift portal thing that you can run anywhere you're at, and it'll take you back to town, sell your crap, put it in storage, go back out. It works just like portals in Diablo. But they don't have the old Diablo 2 style. You must have a scroll to make it work. It just works. So it's more like the Diablo 3 approach. And I like it. I think you should spend some time with it. It's Grim Dawn on the PC. I want to say it's only like $20. Or is that, maybe that's what the Kickstarter was and now it's more. I'm not totally sure about that. It's on Steam and runs great on a range of PCs, and I don't know how you can go too wrong. I'm still doing my Tomb Raider playthrough. We're up to part 10 of the YouTube series, which you can find at youtube.com/ScottJohnson. It is me. Is it part 10? Let's see. I have a little image here. Yeah, part 10 is what I'm at. I call it Raiding More Tombs, part 10, and you can see parts 1 through 9 as well. They're all up there freely available. It is just me and Lara Croft kicking ass and taking names. So if you're interested, boy, have I got a deal for you. That game is really good. I'm 100% confident when I say Xbox One users, buyers, owners, whatever, were right in saying that that was an incredible game. And PlayStation 4 owners, which includes me, were very upset that we didn't get that game day and date. They're still getting it this fall, I guess. But how happy was I when I heard the PC version was going to come a little bit early, and we got it in, what, 2-3 weeks ago now? And it's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. It runs really well. I got a pretty jacked up rig, so it's, you know, probably not surprising, but it runs really well there. I find this story and the amount of actual tombs I get to raid way more compelling than the first game. That first game was great, don't get me wrong. Cool game. But I wasn't raiding very many tombs. You can see my fingers are up making quote marks. There were no tombs to raid in the first game. Not very much anyway. A couple little things here and there. This is like every other corner you come around, a tomb to raid. Because I, as you know, am the tomb raider in this game. Therefore, she should be constantly raiding tombs. And I'll say this. If there was ever a time where I wanted to say that Nathan Drake has some trouble in terms of competition, it's now. This is so good. Well, this is easy for me to say. I'm putting this game above all other Uncharted games I've played. I like this better thus far than any time I had in those games. And I love those games. So that should tell you something. Will 4 stack up to this? Will it make me change my mind? Will, you know, what will happen? I don't know. It's on Sony to do this, and Sony has to make me happy. Sony has to come out with 4 and go, look, Scott, Nathan Drake is the man. He's the explorer you want and need. Forget about that Lara Croft. But right now, Lara Croft has the crown, and his work's cut out for him. And no, I haven't played The Witness, before anyone asks. I have not been in the mood to have my brain hurt. You gotta understand, me and puzzle games, we have a very unusual and storied history. I like a puzzle game. I like to be challenged in that way. I like to figure things out and have the satisfaction of knowing I did it. But 100 hours of puzzles, which is what that game purports to have, is not exactly... Let's put it this way. It is not exactly congruous with my current lifestyle of how busy I am. I feel like me getting into that is like asking for a big... It's going to ask for one of two things. Either complete immersion and I do nothing else and I'm late on everything. Or I start it, get stumped and don't care and stop playing. And then I've spent $39 for like three levels. Three puzzles. Not interested. I mean, I am interested. Don't get me wrong. I want to play this game. I want Jonathan Blow to know what he makes interests me. I liked Braid a lot. But I'm in a different place than when Braid came out. My brain is already tackling so many things. Can I even come close to doing it? Probably not. All right, check this out. Overwatch beta back on the 9th. That's in what? How many days? Tomorrow? That's tomorrow, dude! Oh my gosh. Everyone take the day off tomorrow if you have a beta account, because tomorrow Overwatch beta comes back. Blizzard's new first-person shooter that I haven't stopped talking about since it came out. This will include their progression system. How are you going to level through stuff? Whether that's per character, on account, or whatever. What is the progression in the game? Every game has progression. What's this game's progression? Does it unlock perks? What does it do? We don't know. They've been tight-lipped about that. That will launch tomorrow. Along with that, two new maps. Don't know what they are yet or what they're called. And a new map mode that will, I'm presuming, work on all maps. Because my current belief is this, and I don't know this for sure, but I talked about this on the instance, and I'll say it again here. I think that this game will feature, at least at launch, three main modes. Maybe more modes, but every mode will apply to every map. So if a map is deathmatch, capture the flag, or whatever the equivalent is, and let's say capture and hold, let's say those are the three things. I'm not saying those are it, but let's say, for argument's sake, that's what these are. Every map will be able to do those three types. It's a bit like Call of Duty, the way they do it. You've got a map, and it supports all the game types, and it would be dumb for them not to. To me, that's the standard. So I wouldn't be surprised if everything just supported straight out of the gate whatever this new map mode is. And the current theory on the map mode is some kind of capture the something. Probably capture the gauntlet that's in the intro video, or capture, I don't know what, but there's going to be some thing you got to go and get and strap to your back and run back to your base, or they'll change it up and add a little Blizzard flair and do something slightly different. I don't know. There was talk about capturing a giant mech. I don't know how that would work, but I'm very much looking forward to this game and cannot wait to get my hands on it, which will happen again tomorrow. And maybe some of you too, which I'll talk about in a sec. But before I do that, someone's on the line. Who's this?
Hey, this is Martin, or Kelto in the chat room.
Hey, Martin, what's going on, man? How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
So, on the Overwatch subject, League of Legends has been around for a long time. But, you know, 4 or 5 years. But in the past few weeks, as the spring split is open for the LCS, some of the pros have been talking about how the new, quote, meta is kind of taking the game in a different direction, and maybe we're kind of seeing the decline maybe in the next 2 or 3 years.
Are you telling me that a community of online gamers are upset about a change in a video game? Is that the crazy thing I'm hearing from you right now? Because that sounds impossible.
Yeah, I know, it's so crazy.
Sorry, go ahead. Keep going.
But it is interesting that it is coming from, you know, more of the professional community this time.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering what you thought about maybe Blizzard's ability to bring a game like Overwatch or even Heroes of the Storm to be a game on the professional level, to be something that lasts maybe not 5 or 6 years, but 10, 15, even 20 years.
Oh, that's an awesome question. I'll tell you this one off the air. You can listen to it there. Thanks for the call, by the way. You're the man. I believe that Blizzard has the wherewithal to do this with every property they have, with the exception of maybe Diablo and and World of Warcraft. I don't think World of Warcraft competitive stuff like arenas and that has ever had the same draw, certainly not the same draw as MOBAs do in the market, but even the same draw that their own StarCraft does or Hearthstone or whatever. So I think that they are very interested, and Activision too, so we'll lump them in together. I think they are very interested in planting a flag early and strong in this particular phase of esports and competitive play. And I think very much they want things to happen with the Heroes side of things, where that becomes a very competitive, professionally played game. And you could argue it already is. It doesn't have near the audience that some of these older, more venerable games like League and Dota do, but they're working on it. It's already the most competitive game I play, and I think Overwatch is right up there as well. So bottom line is, I don't think Blizzard wants to make a game that people are interested in for 5 years. I think they do want to make something they'll play for 20 to, or 25. They've shown that in the past. They've shown it with StarCraft. StarCraft 1 is still the game everyone plays in parts of Asia and South Korea. Why wouldn't they want to try to do more of that? They kind of invented it in a lot of ways. So I have a lot of faith in that. Hi, you're on the air. Who's this?
Hi, this is Josh here, longtime listener, first-time caller.
Well, hello, Josh. Nice to have you on. What's up?
Now, on your topic about Blizzard esports with Overwatch having a pretty big push, it seems, from Blizzard, Activision recently bought MLG to make their own, quote-unquote, the ESPN of esports. Do you think, because Blizzard has always had their own thing kind of for their esports, at BlizzCon, they've always, you know, like the WCS with StarCraft. Are we going to start seeing Blizzard games and Activision games kind of in the same, like, realm of esports, like their own network, like start seeing, you know, like Overwatch and Call of Duty at the same events?
Well, awesome question. Thanks for your call. I would answer this by saying there's no, well, all right, look, it was a relatively small acquisition in terms of dollars. They spent, $48 million or something, $49 million on that acquisition of MLG. MLG has some established cred in this world. However, by all accounts, before this purchase, MLG was on the decline. And because they were on the decline, many are surprised that they were worth the money that Blizzard and Activision paid. I'm actually of the opposite opinion. I think they got kind of a steal. Whatever infrastructure or whatever stuff they got, including a nearly built stadium made just for esports, will only help pad out their other plans. They already had those two other hires, the ESPN ex-chief, one of the founders of MLG, and now I think both are there now with this acquisition. I forget how that all worked out, but it basically says, look, we are serious about esports. Now, here's the big hairy question. Are they now the only place you can get their competitive play? Like, when you want to see competitive Hearthstone or Overwatch or even Heroes or whatever, are you going to go only get that at MLG.com or Blizzard Gaming, whatever they're going to call it in the future? I hope not. I think it would behoove them to spread it around as much as they can. I want it so players can still go to Twitch. They can still go to these other services. They can still go to places to see it, and they can go to ESPN. Like, they've got this deal with Heroes of the Dorm. I don't think you want to shut it off and say, this is your exclusive only place you can get it, and if you want it somewhere else, then F off, because there's no other way to do it. I think that is bad. Creating that kind of false exclusivity is bad for esports. It's bad for Blizzard. It's bad for Activision. It's bad for players and fans. So I don't know. So the answer is I don't know. But if I have any prediction, it's that Blizzard is so serious about not just playing catch up in esports, but coming back to dominate it like they once did with StarCraft. Now that they are not just the World of Warcraft company and they can look outside of those blinders of World of Warcraft and focus on other stuff, I think they are dead set on being really important in that space. And I would be shocked if they didn't somehow pull it off. Microsoft says, sorry about that brief time. You could play Red Dead Redemption again, but then you couldn't again. This is for Xbox One users. I keep saying users. Owners. Users. Well, maybe you're users. Your owners first. Your player. No, you know what? Xbox One players. There you go, Scott. Whip that one right out. Microsoft has responded in a matter, sort of, regarding Red Dead Redemption on Xbox One, and this weekend it was briefly playable. So there were people who were playing it before the access was shut down on Sunday. Major Nelson has come out and others and apologized and said, whoops, this wasn't supposed to happen early. There were other games in this group. It wasn't just that. One of the Tekken games. Crap, I forgot the other ones and I didn't write them down. Anyway, a handful of games popped when they shouldn't have. They're still in testing. That means they're still coming. And they were like, yeah, someone pulled the trigger too early and you weren't supposed to get them yet. So worry not. If you were looking forward to more Red Dead in your life, by gum, there's more Red Dead coming in your life. Titanfall. Remember that? Speaking of Xbox One, that was a big deal for a while there, for a minute. I don't have anything bad to say about Titanfall, except that it didn't seem to have the holding power, or the staying power that even Call of Duty and other shooters have. But regardless, here's a happy note. Titanfall 2 will have a single-player campaign. This according to the game's lead writer, who confirmed this information for Forbes. Forbes.com is my understanding, not the magazine. Is there still a magazine? Probably is. What are magazines, Dad?
Well, son, back in the day.
Anyway, in this interview, they say, this is Respawn Entertainment, they say they're looking into a companion TV series about Titanfall. So Titanfall, the television series. What would you call that? I guess just Titanfall? Probably. Yeah. Jesse Stern has confirmed to Forbes that it's part of the game to have this traditional campaign. I think that's good. This maybe the thing I liked least about Titanfall on the PC was complete and utter lack of a campaign. And Stern's got some good writing credits. He wrote for Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, and did a five-year stint on CBS's crime drama NCIS. That seems in keeping with his style. And yeah, Titanfall. He would serve as a dude to help write that campaign and help write a potential TV show, which is still a little bit weird to me. Apple said no to Binding of Isaac's Rebirth because they think it's violent towards kids. Oh, you guys got a call on this one. 801-895-4724. I want to hear what you have to say. So, Binding of Isaac, since its premiere in what, 2011 was it? The original one, not this remix, or not the Rebirth version, has been the subject of all kinds of controversy. Overt or religious tones, it's kind of an Old Testament tale, but rewrapped in this weird kind of wrapping. You're this little kid with a psycho mom who's ultra religious and is willing to sacrifice you in the name of her beliefs, and you end up going through this procedurally generated dungeon to try to get out of there and live or whatever. That's basically it. And people flipped out about that back in the day. And even today, it still garners some freak out, including this. The iOS version of Binding of Isaac Rebirth was rejected by Apple's people, the ones that curate the App Store, I suppose. And they did it on grounds that it depicts violence toward children. This was according to the game's publisher Sunday evening, or Saturday evening. Tyrone Rodriguez, the founder of Nicalis, is that how you say it? Nicalis may cause itching and burning. If Nicalis gives you an erection for more than 4 hours, good luck to you. anyway, they are the producer and developer of the game, tweeted an image of Apple's rejection notice, and it says, quote, your app contains content or features that depict violence towards or abuse of children, which is not allowed on the app. Nintendo, if you may recall, rejected the same game for the 3DS and Wii U. And at the time, they said it was for questionable religious content. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. It'll probably end up making it on there. You make a big enough stink about this stuff and they start to look at it twice. But I don't know. There are things on the App Store that I wonder how they got through. And then one this high profile doesn't get through, but is really not about abusing children. I mean, I guess you could argue that the story part of it, as thin as it may be, is about a kid being terrorized by his overly, overtly dogmatic mother. I guess. I'm not trying to defend them. I'm just trying to get in their heads. Because there's a lot of other apps out there that are just kind of horrible. Not just horrible, like, content-wise, but just plain old horrible. So I don't take the excuse that, well, they're just trying to curate a better experience. I agree with that when it comes to viruses and stuff like that. But when it comes to content, then you get into subjective territory, like, is Binding of Isaac this evil thing or not? Or is it depicting actual abuse of children? And I don't. A video game. It's got cartoon dudes in it. I guess all video games are cartoon dudes at one level or another. I don't know. I'd like to know what you guys think. Feel free to call in 801-895-4724. The number's right up in front of the video. All right. I like this. Unreal's editor, you can now use it in VR. You soon will be able to. You don't quite get to yet. Tim Sweeney, founder of Epic Games, got up on a video and he said, check it out, man. We've made it so you can pop this Oculus or this Vive or this whatever on your head and you can walk around your virtual world and build stuff. You can pinch and zoom and rotate and pick up a block and move it someplace else. And you decide, oh, shoot, this arch isn't high enough for my first-person shooter man to run through. So just stretch that out a little bit, a little pinch and zoom on that thing. And you're like, you know what? I need a little code here or I need to pull from another asset or something. And you pull up your arm and you got like a little wristwatch thing on and it projects a big iPad-looking console and you can type stuff in there and basically work in the virtual world, which is pretty amazing. More on that in a second. Before that, a phone call. Hi, who's this?
Hey, it's Diced Tomato. What's going on?
Hey, Diced Tomato. How are you, man?
Doing good. Doing good.
Good, good, good. What's on your mind?
So I had a comment about your Binding of Isaac thing, and that was kind of funny because I think you mentioned what it was banned from Nintendo as well.
Yeah, Nintendo banned it, and so did Apple, yeah.
Right, considering they'll have games like, let's say, Smash Brothers, for example, that have two children, Lucas and Ness from Homebound, and there's violence right there all over Smash Brothers. What's going on with that?
Okay, see, now this is where we get, where I think these companies get in trouble, because they start picking and they say, well, this small indie game, relatively small indie game, with this kind of disturbing, weird art style and terrifying dungeons and whatever, you know, for these weird, dirty PC users, now they want to bring this over into our pristine palace and see if we'll push this thing. I think they get weird about that stuff, whereas you're absolutely right. Like, you are encouraged to beat the hell out of Ness. You are encouraged to to do all sorts of terrible things to Princess Peach, to a lady, you know?
I mean, and that probably is just all it is, just a matter of perspective on how the content is conveyed.
Yeah, because Nintendo's point of view might be, oh, well, it's because they're, you know, they're these venerable characters and there's no blood and we're just having a good time, everybody. But it is such a subjective thing that I'm a huge believer in letting, rate it what you're going to rate it. We have the rating system for a reason. You want to give that thing an AO rating or something, fine, whatever you got to do. But I'm such a big believer, especially with parents who they seem to be the most worried about here. Like, will parents know that their kids are playing this? That seems like the bottom line, right? Like, who else are we worried about offending? Right. So if they're saying, yeah, we're worried about kids and what they get to play, and we're worried about parents being able to make good choices, then I say, let the parents make good choices. Parents need to be more involved anyway. You don't just give your kid an iPad or an iPhone and tell them to download anything he feels like. If you're doing that, you're freaking parenting wrong. So yeah, I'm a big fan of them letting those people educate them, you know, say things like, this is, you know, rated whatever, or this has got explicit content or whatever it is that is an accurate portrayal of what's in the thing. But then don't let parents be perpetually, you know, stupid and ignorant. Help them know what they're doing. And that's all
I'd
have to
say.
I
agree.
Yeah, well, thanks, man. Go dice some more tomatoes, will you? Dice some of those damn tomatoes. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah. So this VR thing, Unreal. Thanks for the call, Dice Tomato. You can do everything you can do in the editor, you can do in virtual space. And you should watch the video. Go search for it. They said that at GDC, they will announce when you can get it. And it'll be freely available to whoever wants to use it, just as the current Unreal editor is free and available to anyone. But they will not announce the day that you can get it until GDC. My prediction is you'll be able to get it the day of GDC, because they're going to get up and go, yeah, we got this thing, it's great, here it is, a demo from the stage, and isn't this wonderful, and you can get it today. Doom hits May 13th. That's the launch date for Doom, the new Doom. It's not Doom 4. It's not an expansion to Doom 3. This is straight up reboot of Doom. If you haven't been paying attention, living under a rock, Doom is coming out. Looks pretty awesome. The trailers are sweet. There's another trailer floating around this week. And if you want to get the collector's edition, you can get a big 12-inch tall demon statue. And you can name him, and you can love him, and keep him with you always, watch TV with him. You can go to the park with him. He's yours to have. He's yours to do with what you will. Doom. Speaking of games parents and retailers and politicians freak out about, we're bringing it back, baby. It looks pretty good. I'm very excited about Doom. I think it looks real good, considering where we're at with it. Chat room seems to agree. Dice Tomato. Ness and Lucas. Totes kids, yo. Absolutely. Oh, someone sent a Doom song. What is this Doom song? Let's play it. It's a YouTube link.
Filthy heads of our doomed enemies.
It's Invader Zim. Let's see what they do.
No.
Oh, I remember this. Thanks for the reminder. Good times. Where are we? Oh, yeah, Doom. 13th of May. Get ready. PlayStation 4, Windows PC, Xbox One. That's your day. Bethesda Softworks announced it yesterday morning. Was it this morning? Yesterday. Today? I forget. If you want that collector's edition with the Demon Man, you got to pay $119.99 US. That's $129.99 in euros. And 99 £100 in the UK. And if you pre-order either the collector's edition or the standard edition, you also get a demon multiplayer pack. This includes, I guess, a unique demon armor with 3 skin variations, 6 metallic paint colors, blah, blah, blah. Don't care. Not going to spend the extra money. Just want to play. Really, I don't care. I just want to play. Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens has a Lego game coming out. Seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? This was announced with a big trailer. They basically took the Star Wars trailers and had some fun with it. It was pretty good. But here's my guess. You're going to run around as a little Lego man, and you're going to collect little Lego pieces when you break stuff and move things around, and you're going to solve some simple puzzles like, I need to build a little Lego block so I can jump up higher, and I'm going to do that because I collected some Lego stuff, or I need to move with my force powers this thing over there. I guess what I'm saying is, if you have played a Lego game in the last decade, you will likely feel right at home with this. Where those games excel for me, I think they're fun at their core level and maybe a little old, but still fun. Where they really win it for me lately is they do a lot more with story than they used to, and they have a lot more fun with cutscenes, and I look forward to that stuff. So, just remember, when you buy that thing,
you must finish what you've started.
There you go. It's a terrible joke, Scott. Why'd you do that? Why'd you do that? Madden screwed up. Madden did not get the game right. The Carolina Panthers were supposed to, according to Madden 2016, were supposed to defeat the Denver Broncos 24-20 in Super Bowl 50. And they were famous last year for accurately predicting not only the outcome of the game last year, but the exact score of the game between Seattle and the Patriots, but not so much with the Panthers and the Broncos, which is crazy. But I don't know why they make such a big deal out of this, because either it's complete luck that it happens or it gets it wrong. This is like Punxsutawney Phil. This is like the stupid gopher that sees his shadow. Wait, is it a gopher, Carter? What? Is it a gopher that sees his shadow? Hedgehog, no. Groundhog. Yeah, the groundhog sees the shadow, and then it's stupid. It's dumb. I mean it's kind of a fun tradition, I guess, and I'm not decrying that, and they should keep doing that, but nobody should take it seriously. Like, you know, there was somebody out there who last year saw that go down and went, they predicted the future. EA, speaking of EA, because they do that, their game, it's in the game. EA Sports. EA is not coming to E3 this year. No E3 for EA. For the first time in the entire history of the Electronic Entertainment Expo, which has been around since, what, 95? So 21 years. And they're not coming back to that. And you know why? Well, there's two reasons. One, they said they're not coming. And two, when you give up that space, you give it up for good. At least that's the talk. I'm guessing they have enough money that they could probably bribe it back. But they don't want to do it. They're going to go the Nintendo route. They're going to do some video stuff. You could argue that E3 is less and less a place every year for people to do what they need to get done for the money it costs. You can interface with retailers. You can interface with the press. You can do a lot of things with your own events, which they also run. And the Nintendo Direct thing, I think, proved that that was the best thing for Nintendo to do. I really like those. I like them a lot better than a stage thing. It may spell the doom of the future of big companies having a ton of space and not getting much out of that space. We're just too connected now. Like, any of us can open our phone right now and watch a video presented by somebody on, I don't know, Activision's board talking about rad stuff they have coming up. I mean, what do we need the big stage thing for? It's so expensive for them. So this means they're not doing floor space, they're not exhibiting, and they're not doing a stage thing like an EA press conference. Now, others may sneak in there. So you got Bethesda doing another one this year. They did one last year. And they're coming in again. So it's not to say there isn't a place for this or that companies won't still do it, but it is a weird sign of the times that EA and Nintendo, while Nintendo still exhibits, Nintendo not doing any sort of, you know, big press event thing on a stage was weird at the time. I think EA pulling out of actual, like, show space, like actual event space, is really crazy. But I kind of get it. I kind of understand. So good luck to all of them, I guess. E3 coming up, baby, soon. Well, June or July, whatever it is. Sooner than you think. All right, let's do some emails. Why not, I say. Actually, we'll do phone calls. How about that instead? And I don't mean the live kind. I have some where you guys left messages on a very different phone number to use, 801-471-0462. That's the voicemail line. Or boopshow@gmail.com. That's 801-471-0462 or boopshow@gmail.com. Here's a call about Diablo and leveling.
Good day, Mr. Johnson. This week on Boop, you were talking about Diablo and how you wanted to level on your own, no help, no rushing. And I'm with you. Actually, we have a group of friends, and we do the same thing. So this season, it was my turn to level. And I will tell you this. Level to roughly 40-ish, and then it will start to take your soul away, and you will die for the next 4-5 hours. So have your friends ready. Do your leveling and enjoy the experience, but just be ready to not have fun anymore until you get to 70. So, boop.
He's not wrong. I sometimes wonder if Blizzard wouldn't do well in that game to offer people a paid boost of some sort to just skip leveling, get right to end game at 70, start working on sets and stuff. I don't know. I predict we'll hear something in the future about that. But for now, I guess it still works. It really doesn't take too long. And for fun, so I'm slowly leveling this Witch Doctor at my own pace. But I have a barbarian that I decided to level live on the experience point stream on a Saturday, and we did it in an hour and 15 minutes. Not only that, but we got a few paragon levels on top of it. So we went from zero, naked barbarian man, to fully clothed, full set, dungeon set, you know, ready to do torment 4 and 5 barbarian in an hour and 14 minutes. 15 minutes, but it's a super cheaty way to do it. I mean, they ran me through stuff, and I'm not here to tell you I did it on my own, all right? I'm here to have full disclosure. I almost said exposure.
Hey, this is Paul. I'm calling for Boop. I'm wondering why there's no Battlefronts talk. I haven't played video games in a long time, but got a PS4 for Christmas to play Battlefronts. Even though I totally suck at first-person shooters, it is totally addicting and totally immersive and totally Star Wars, and if you're not playing, then... Yes, you do. Thanks.
So I think Battlefront is maybe the best looking game of last year. I think it's the most true to any Star Wars game we've ever been given. But I think it was woefully undercooked in terms of content and doesn't have the long-term hooks it needs to be a thing I wanted to spend full retail price for. Now, if EA turns around and says Battlefront is $19.99, then we've got a deal. But as it stands right now, that's too much money for the game you got. It works for lots of people, and I'm glad for that. I'm glad they have their shooter this year. It's just not meaty enough for me. And in the face of the now returning Overwatch, I don't know that I need any shooter for a while. I love it that much. How much do I love it? That much.
Greetings, Mr. Johnson. This is Zero once again with a question or comment for the Boop Show. So, with PlayStation VR coming out and the PlayStation Move more or less going the way of the diseased Dodo, flaming pile of turd that can't be forgotten fast enough. What is your opinion of the Vita possibly being a accelerometer handheld device that works coinciding with that, because now they're marketing the Vita as a accessory to the PS4. Thoughts? Opinions? Small children holding small animals? Have a great day.
I don't know. Let me tell you my overall theory on this, and this will hopefully help answer that question, but also just give my 2 cents on the Sony thing and whether or not people agree with it. You can tell me. But here's what I think, and I'll also answer. Chat room's been asking me a bunch of questions. I'll get to those in a second. All right. I believe that the PlayStation VR will probably be about $300. There were already some rumors floating this weekend that price had been leaked at that, and I was like getting excited because I thought my prediction was right, but turns out those were not real, so I don't know yet. But if it turns out you can go buy a PlayStation, even a bundle, PlayStation and a PlayStation VR together, or even separately, and spend less money or about the same amount of money total as you would for an Oculus Rift, which is $600, what, $599? That's an insane advantage, especially considering the good press that the device itself has. People say it's a great VR experience, doesn't make them sick, comfortable to wear, all the things you need a good VR thing to do. The optics are good, all that. If they can get that whole thing under that cost, that's huge and transcends, I think, the stigma of consoles releasing quote-unquote peripherals later that don't do very well. 32X on the Sega Genesis. The Rumble Pack thing. Not Rumble Pack. What was the Nintendo thing that boosted like your performance in games like Turok? What was that called? Ah, crap. Someone's going to remember it. Anyway. Those kinds of things typically don't do very well. Or the Kinect. The original Kinect did okay. Not great. Why? Well, it wasn't packed in with everything. Why don't people buy stuff that's packed in with everything? Well, I don't know why, but that's just a console thing. PC players are used to saying, yeah, I want to add this new thing. But part of the deal there is you know it can work with that PC for a much longer time, and if you get a new PC, you can keep using it for the new one. This is stuff that doesn't happen with consoles. So its ability to maintain itself post-release of that thing, I think, has a way better chance than previous products have because of the draw of VR. All of that being said, price point's going to be huge. I think Sony has a chance to totally dominate VR for this next year for home VR. I think Gear VR for the guys at Samsung kind of will dominate mobile and whatever supposedly rumored is happening over at Google this year. There's some talk they're going to release some sort of something. And, Vive pre-orders are soon, but I don't think we have ship dates for that yet. We'll all have Oculus soon. I mean, all this is going to be very plain very soon. If Sony is the third to hit market, yet the cheapest to get into, I think they may have a real winner on their hands. They've already got a huge install base that only need the headset. I don't know. It's their fight this year anyway to lose. If they screw this up, they're idiots. You know, and Microsoft doesn't have anything near ready with their augmented stuff or any of that. So, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. Apple may have something in the works. Who else would be interesting in this fight? I mean, Sony's in it. Who else would be? I mean, Microsoft, if they suddenly had VR or a VR solution that we didn't know they were working on. Or if what if they had a slightly less expensive, slightly less rad version of the Oculus as a Microsoft warranted VR device to work with the Xbox One? That's possible. I mean, they're packing Xbox One controllers in with every Oculus sold. Oh, there's so much stuff coming up, man. It's going to be the weirdest, coolest year. This and 2017 are going to be bananas for this stuff. Netflix VR, I'm so ready, Allura. I'm so ready. All right, real quick, I want to answer a couple of questions I saw in the chat room. Got one from Dice Tomato. Says, he's also in the chat. What are your thoughts on The Division? I meant to play the beta. I had a key and I didn't have time. So I can't speak to it, but I'm very happy to hear all the good reports I'm hearing. I want a game that sort of does what Destiny does, but doesn't quite do it as poorly as Destiny did at launch. So I'm interested. I like Tom Clancy. I like the world that his games are set in. I like this sort of dystopic thing that happens in New York. I like everything about it. I just want it to be good, and Ubisoft has let me down recently with some things. So if they can pull this out, I'd be super stoked. That would be awesome. Tazalek says, do you think Blizzard will hold to the on before dates from BlizzCon? Overwatch 21st of June, Legion 21st of September. Yes, I don't think those are changing. I don't have any reason to think those will change. So watch for that. Very excited, man. It's going to be a good year. 2016 is going to be a good year. We all thought 2015 was one of the best gaming years in a long time. I would agree with that. But this year is going to be huge. All right, that's going to do it. Thanks everybody who came to the live show today. Those who called in especially, you guys are awesome. We'll do this each and every week. Take your phone calls, take your questions via the chat room, and of course, you can keep calling us and leaving us voicemails and emails to be read and played on the show. Frogpants.com/boop is the website. Everything is there. But in case you can't find it, the email address is boopshow@gmail.com. 801-471-0462 is the phone number. On Twitter, @boopshow. And you can support the show if you want. Patreon.com/frogpants. It helps this and other Frogpants shows thrive and survive. And would be mucho appreciated. Also get you into the exclusive Slack group we originally set up for the TMS Patreon, but we extended it to everyone else. So if you want to get in there, you surely can talk to all your good buddies in the community. Or you can buy stuff on the Frog Pants store, frogpants.com/store. There's a million ways to do it. Anyway, huge thanks to everybody for watching. Thanks to all the live folks, everyone at home. I'll see you guys next Monday for brand new Boop. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.